NBA Draft 2022. Are there any future superstars in this year's NBA Draft when we look at the top four prospects? What makes Jabari Smith Jr. such an intriguing prospect for the Houston Rockets? What is the biggest red flag when it comes to Chet Holmgren? We're going to dive into all of that and more coming up right here at Locked On Rockets.
This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
With the second pick in the 2021 NBA Draft, the Houston Rockets select Jalen Green.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep getting better every day. I'm going to keep perfecting my craft. And every time I step on that floor, I'm coming.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What's up and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and also host of Locked On NBA Mondays. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin and the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets. As always, appreciate you for making Locked On Rockets your first listen each and every day. Now, today's episode is brought to you by NBA Top Shot. NBA Top Shot is the future of being an NBA fan. Own officially licensed rare NFTs of the greatest moments from NBA history. Sign up today at LockedOn.NBAtopshot.com. Joining us now is Richard Stayman, one of the incredible hosts of the Locked On NBA Draft podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Mavs Draft, but we won't hold the Twitter handle against him. Just like last season, you know, we appreciate Richard for his insight and his analysis. We don't hold his fandom against him because he's one of the most knowledgeable guys when it comes to the NBA draft. Richard, it's that time of year, man, and things are heating up. We're the NBA season is winding down. The tanking teams, depending on which team you are, you've had your eyes set on the draft for a while now. The Houston Rockets definitely have, with the fact that they've got the worst record in the association, which means that they're eyeing another top pick this year. Now, I've discussed here and there, you know, my kind of, you know, big board and where I've got the top four prospects ranked. And I've actually been sitting on kind of the same top four in order for a while now, with Jabari at one, Chet at two, Jaden Ivey at three, and Paolo all the way down at four. So I want to, before we'll open the floor, give me your big board right now for the top four prospects, and we'll get into the discussions about this being a top four draft and some of the other angles that we can dissect from this one.
Yeah, first of all, you have the consensus opinion with the very minimal NBA people I've spoken with. It seems that's the consensus around the league, that top four that you just listed, with Ivy at three, Jabari number one, Chet two, Ivy, and then Paolo. Paolo's end of the season was pretty rough. This was the last time I talked to someone within the league that gave me some insight like that was the very end of the regular season of college basketball, so earlier this month in March. But things can obviously change. I actually, I don't have the consensus top four. I have my top four goes Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, Paolo, and then I have AJ Griffin actually at four. I'm very high on him. I love the duo of him and Paolo. I think to some extent, you know, both of them, I don't want to say hold each other back because it's not at all what it is. But, you know, if they had been at separate schools where they were both the man, I think, you know, you're being like the alpha, established alpha, whereas, you know, Duke has five first round talents. Both of them would have been benefited a lot.
So is AJ Griffin your book night pick this year? Is that what's happening?
You know, I feel like AJ Griffin generally floats around the 6 or 5 range. So like bumping him up a little bit isn't as much as bumping Booknight, who was like, you know, seen around 10 to 6 or 5. I think that was probably a little bit egregious in hindsight, but I don't think it's quite that. I have a different Booknight this year.
Okay. That's fair. All right. That's fair. Well, and I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later on, either in this episode or another one a little bit further down the line, because we've got so much time between now and the actual NBA draft, which means we have a lot of ground to cover. But knowing that you don't necessarily have the consensus top four big board, have you, as far as this draft goes, it feels like the pack is kind of separating into, at least as far as the general consensus is concerned, with Jabari and Chet kind of in their own tier at the top, and then Jaden Ivey and Paolo Banchero kind of in that second tier at the 3-4 spots. Do you kind of agree with that assessment to this point?
You know, I would probably put, it's kind of weird, I would put Ivey, I guess, in the middle. He's like in that tier 1.5, where he's not quite Chet and Jabari, but he's also, I think, clearly for a lot of people above Paolo. Obviously, you know, I have Paolo above, but I do see the argument with Jaden Ivey. I just think Paolo will end up better. I think both are very good players, but I think he's kind of in between those, the first and second tier.
Okay. And that's kind of, as I've watched, you know, more and more Jaden Ivey footage, that's kind of where I've come to is I haven't quite, you know, gone overboard to put Ivy above Chet Holmgren on my board quite just yet. But I've been vocal about, like, I'm getting closer and closer to making that switch. And it's largely because I have so many concerns, Richard, about Chet Holmgren and just his frame at the NBA level. And these are a lot of the same discussions that we had last year regarding Evan Mobley and the concerns about him being a big at the NBA level. Will his frame actually be able to survive? And I think now, when you look at Chet, that's almost like a completely different distinction, because Evan Mobley, you looked at him and you're like, oh yeah, maybe he's a little, you know, put some weight on him, he'll be fine. He's got the frame, he'll fill out, all that. I look at Chet Holmgren and I'm like, what hope is there that he is going to fill out? I mean, he's like Poku walked so that Chet could run, essentially, right, is what I'm looking at here.
Yeah, and you know, I was looking at their weights and they're almost 20 pounds apart. Like, Evan Mobley is 20 pounds heavier and it's 15-20 pounds, excuse me. And like, that's a big deal at 7 feet. And that's why I don't feel like it was like, yeah, it's a concern, but is it really a fatal flaw that could come up? Whereas with Chet, the reason I've heard a lot of NBA teams don't have him number one is they don't trust his body to actually hold up for an entire NBA season. Whether that's 41 games they see him playing or 62, whatever it is, there's a big difference between those two numbers. I don't know, but the body is a very real concern for Chet.
As far as the, just kind of looking down the list of the top guys, I want to kind of work our way down from 1 through 4, you know, to this point, because I wanted to get some general thoughts and opinions out of you first, just to kind of lay the framework. But Jabari Smith is a guy that I've had my eyes on for a while. It really feels like he has this entire package that's going to translate really, really well at the NBA level. You look at the size, the shooting, the defensive capability. Do you see the one area that I don't see out of him, right, is I don't necessarily see potential, like, future superstar written on him is the thing. Like, I see a really, really good top-end NBA talent, and I think maybe that's, like, I don't necessarily know if that's a knock on him, but it's one of those things where, like, I've comped him to Chris Middleton, whether or not you think that's, like, comparable or not. But if you were to tell an NBA fan base, hey, with the number one overall pick, you're going to draft Chris Middleton, like, I feel like a lot of fan bases wouldn't be super stoked about that, even though Middleton is an incredible NBA player.
Yeah, and the general feel with this draft that I've gotten is like, you're not getting a superstar. It's not, we've been spoiled by the last three seasons. We had Zion Ja at the top. Even 2020, we had Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball. Both of those players should have been all-stars this year. And then last year, like, we all know how stacked it was. This year, it drops off. And, you know, there are years where it drops off and number one isn't the greatest. However, if you still get an all-star out of number one, you're probably still looking at a pretty decent class. You just may not get the superstar. It's very much a good second option is at the top of the draft, whereas last year was a bunch of first options. And, you know, that's the drop-off. And I like your Chris Middleton comp. I have a very similar one. It's basically, you know, bigger Chris Middleton also is a very, very good player. Because Middleton's already a top 40 player. You add a few inches to him, and he's probably a little bit higher than that top 30. I say a bigger Klay Thompson with a little bit less shooting, because I think it's unfair to you know, crown arguably the second greatest shooter of our generation onto a prospect. But, you know, tone the shooting down just a little bit, but that's what you get is a little bit bigger Klay Thompson. So, and I think that's still a very good player.
We're going to get into some of the specifics on Jabari Smith, as well as Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero, and Jaden Ivey coming up in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at Bet Online. It's that time of year again. We got March Madness in full swing, and you know that BetOnline has you covered with all the latest odds, contests, and player props. Just right now, like, I'm looking right now, and the one that jumps off the page to me is the fact that Purdue against St. Peter's is such a big discrepancy. You got Purdue favored -825 in that game. So, hey, I mean, if you're feeling risky, you could throw a little bit of money on St. Peter's and maybe, you know, cash out, have a nice little payday there. But BetOnline remains the best spot for all of your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. And it's not just basketball. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sports wagering information needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino games. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and action available to you. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast, home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, appreciate you for making Locked On Rockets your first listen each and every day. For your next listen, go check out the Locked On Now podcast, nightly recaps of every NBA game with analysis from our local experts, free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Now, Richard, with Jabari specifically, right, he's got the shooting. I feel like he's got, I feel like he might be honestly the most well-rounded player of the top four in the draft, which is why it feels like a lot of people have him consensus number one, even if it's like 1A, 1B between him and Chet, possibly. Maybe there's just a bit more of a concern with some of the, you know, a bit more of the cons with Chet. Not necessarily cons, but just concerns, right? My biggest thing, though, that I've seen, the biggest critique on Jabari's game is that he maybe isn't necessarily the best at creating his own shot necessarily, is one that I've seen floated around a lot. How concerning is that for you? And do you think that's something that changes at the NBA level, or do you think he just flourishes as a guy that's going to be able to, you know, be a play finisher, but not necessarily a play starter?
Yeah, it depends, I think, on, first of all, the level of play finishing he is, you know, being that spot up shooter, bails out the possession or cutter, whatever it is, how good he is at that. And I think he'll be very good at that. But also it depends on what you're wanting him to create, because if you're wanting him to get to the basket, I think that's where the weaknesses lie, which might be a little bit more concerning than the alternative, which for me, one area I've noticed is he loves his step back jump shot. The problem is he doesn't really, it's a walk backwards. He like moves his feet backwards, but he doesn't really step back. Like, you know, I'm spoiled by watching Luka Doncic every night. The space creation is like this much, and then you get Luka's, who, I mean, it's off camera. Like, he doesn't create much space on that, and that's a huge issue for me. But those, you know, I think they're fixable. I've seen flashes where he goes a little low and brings it inside out, steps back, and he actually does create space. But when he's doing a going forward on pure momentum and stopping and pulling back, it's nothing. So I think those two things, basically how he improves the slashing and the space creation, especially on the step back, are going to be big for him.
Obviously, we're moving into an era of the NBA and have for a while now that is largely positionless. But when you look at him, do you view him as more of a three, a four, maybe, I mean, you know, situationally, maybe a small ball five? Like, and I at the same time, I kind of don't want to put a label on him as far as a position goes, but I kind of do, just in the sense of like matching up, especially defensively, right? Like, is Jabari a guy who at the NBA level you think you can task with guarding some legitimate fours? Does he have the foot speed to stay with some smaller wings? Like, where do you kind of classify him as a defender?
Yeah, I think he's going to be able to handle most positions. I think it kind of depends on the point guard he's drawing. You know, like if someone with John Wall's speed comes by, I mean, him and just about every other big are going to be toast. But there are some point guards, I mean, I think personally, if you put him on someone like Luka, for example, I think he'd actually hold his own. So that level, I mean, obviously that's like an MVP candidate, but the level of athleticism and physicality, all that stuff, it's a little bit different from almost any other player. But the only weaknesses I see for him on defense, in terms of outside of that, are can he guard post-ups? And I'm not really sure. That's a big swing skill, but I mean, he can stay in front of everybody. And to me, I see him as an oversized wing more than a true 4-5-3, whatever it is. I mean, that he's really positionless.
And I think that's, you know, potentially another one of the, you know, you put the check in his favor, just because you look at a guy like, again, Chet, you know, right behind him potentially in the pecking order for the draft. And I think there's maybe some question marks about Chet, right? Is he a four? Is he a five at the NBA level, right? Like, you have to have some understanding of, like, if he's not going to be able to bulk up or add more to his frame, you can't realistically expect Chet Holmgren to go up against Steven Adams when Steven Adams weighs two of Chet Holmgren, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the issue. A lot of people say, like, oh, how's he going to guard Embiid, Giannis, all these people? And, like, nobody can. But, yeah, the games where you need rebounding and you're going against Steven Adams, especially come playoffs or something, where, sure, Steven Adams may get played off, but when he's on the floor, you still need to win the rebounding battle. And I don't know if Chet, for example, is going to win those matchups, or really anybody. I mean, like, it's a tough one. But with Chet in particular, I don't know if he can win that.
Yeah, when I was watching him play the other night, I was watching him with you know, other college kids just getting, like, ragdolled around in the paint, because he just doesn't have the sheer mass to you know, lock himself down and lock down an area of the paint to secure a board. And now some of the rebounds that he was getting were just simply because he was taller than everybody else, right? Where he's got, you know, he's a high point rebounder. He can get the ball from up top and, you know, you can't actually reach it. But at the same time, if he's out of position, can't box out properly, and you've got somebody who might be 6'10 and a bit undersized by comparison, if they're able to use their mass, their size, and do the dirty work early and, you know, get in front of him, get their hips down low, all that good stuff, then, you know, being a high point rebounder at that point doesn't matter if you're pushed 5 feet out of the play because you just can't hold your own space. But back to Jabari here for a second before we move on to the other three guys, because he's the guy that I'm really intrigued by, and I feel like Rockets fans as a collective are really intrigued by at this point. Is there like a fatal flaw that you see in his game at this point? Like the number one red flag for you where, and even if it's not like a huge red flag, but just the area of concern that you want to point to that you've had some reservations about?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it would really just be the slashing. It's almost, I don't think it's an inability, the fact that he doesn't really go to the rim. I think it's more of a mindset, and sometimes that stuff can be worrisome. I feel like, you know, the soft label, I think, is a little bit tough to throw on somebody that's that young. But we did see things like that from DeAndre Ayton at times at Arizona. And it kind of translated. Like, he is at times a little bit timid. And I worry about, and obviously a whole different skill set we're talking about here, but it does translate at times. I worry that the timidness would hold back Jabari Smith, if timidness even is a word. I honestly don't know if I made something up there.
I think timidness is a word. It does sound sort of real. And you know what? All words are made up, so it doesn't really matter, right? Like, we'll just roll with it. Timidness is a word on today's LOR. That's going to be our LOR word of the day, just for you, Richard. But you know, you bring up that point, and I do think there's a distinct difference, right? Like, in style of play, in that I feel like if you're somebody that is going to be, you know, really working and doing the majority of your playing on the interior, be it defensively, offensively, whatever, if you're a big, like a legitimate big, you know, at the NBA level, you have to have a level of like intensity, toughness, whatever, just to survive in that area of the court. That said, Jabari is going to be largely a perimeter oriented player. He might guard some guys, you know, defensively that are a bit bigger if you maybe slot him at the four next to somebody else at the five, but maybe that timidness doesn't necessarily have to rear its ugly head if he's put in a position where he's got to anchor an entire defense like a DeAndre Ayton, right?
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, you kind of said it best. He's going to be on the perimeter. That's defensively, he doesn't shy away from anybody. So I do have confidence. And in fact, it's almost the complete opposite. Like, he loves facing some of the best players. He loves the intensity of that. Maybe it'll translate to offensive ability, especially as a slasher, but it's to be seen.
And defensively, I mean, from the tools that you've seen out of him, you know, he projects to be a good defender, or at least an above average defender. But are there, you know, and again, with some of the comps that we've had here with, you know, yours, Clay, Middleton, I mean, is this a guy that, you know, conceivably has the tools to be competing for like all NBA defense type teams down the line in an NBA career?
I think it's very realistic, especially because he's going to be in the forward slot. I doubt he's really ever going to be in the center or obviously guard, but that's a very tough position. But I do think he's going to get, and rather early into his career, I'd say before the end of his rookie contract, I don't think it's a hot take or anything, but that he'll get all defense votes, and more than just like, oh, hey, one guy voted for him. It'll be really like people are like, hey, this guy's good at defense. Let's put him on this.
So before we move on from Jabari here, because this is an interesting, like, you know, thought experiment here to play with, but we've kind of hyped him up quite a bit here in this episode so far, and for good reason. I think he's the best prospect in the draft. But if you were to try and sell me or somebody against the idea of taking Jabari number one, could you do it? Can you come up with enough evidence to say, no, like, you've got to go with one of these other guys, or just don't take him for XYZ reason?
I think there's really yes and no. The only reason I would say that you wouldn't want him is if you're trying to get a three-level scorer who plays defense, which, by the way, that's like the superstar mold. So you're kind of whale hunting on that if you're really mad that you're not getting that. So it's hard to talk out of that, but also like the whole slashing thing kind of limits the three levels. He's a two-level scorer and it starts further away from the rim, and very, very good defender. But the only reason I would say, hey, like, I'll talk you out of Jabari would be in favor of Chet, for me personally at least, and especially because you look at what he did to close the regular season. He had double digit in all but one game for the final 14 games, which actually was all of January to February, which is their regular season in the West Coast Conference. And he averaged 15.5 points, 11 rebounds, 1.5 assists, 1 steal, 3.7 blocks on 62% shooting, 70% from 2, and 50% from 3 with 80% from the line. And on top of that, Chet has the best shot blocking timing at the very least of any prospect that has come through in the last 10 years. And he has great feel and, you know, potential to handle the ball. Like, you have a real unicorn on your hands. That would be the main reason I'd say, hold up on Jabari. Let's look at Chet instead. But personally, I don't believe that route.
Okay. All right. I that's why I like that thought experiment, just to see like what evidence you could come up with, you know, when pressed for going the opposite direction. But we do want to talk about Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero, and Jaden Ivey a little bit here in the final segment. We're going to get there after a quick message from our friends over at NBA Top Shot. NBA Top Shot's the officially licensed NFT of the NBA. Connect with a community of hundreds of thousands of NBA fans as a natural progression of fantasy sports, a way to upgrade your experience as an NBA fan. Look, NBA Top Shot is really incredible. When I first started getting into it, I was a little, you know, skeptical at first, but it's basically one part trading cards, one part stock market, one part fantasy basketball, and one part like even loyalty program, which is kind of crazy to think about. Last season, Top Shot flew out fans to game 5 of the NBA Finals. Like, being a part of the community and being able to interact with other diehard NBA fans and share in these historic NBA moments is a really cool experience. And it's something you can check out when you get involved with NBA Top Shot. NBA Top Shot is the future of being an NBA fan. Own officially licensed rare NFTs of the greatest moments from NBA history. Sign up today at lockedon.nbatopshot.com. And another message from my friends over at Built Bar, because look, when it comes to protein bars, you've got to check out Built Bar. They are the number one protein bar on the market. They've got so many incredible flavors to choose from: raspberry, strawberry, peanut butter brownie, cookies and cream. I could go on and on and on. Birthday cake was another seasonal one that was incredible. Coconut brownie chunk is my personal favorite. It's the GOAT Built Bar flavor. But every bar is coated in delicious 100% chocolate. They're not gritty or chalky like other protein bars on the market. Every bar is low-cal, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber. Amazing if you're on a keto diet. Amazing if you're trying to cut back and lose a little bit of weight. They're basically candy bars that are jam-packed with protein. That's how good these Built Bars are. And you can check them out. Just go to built.com and use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off your very next order of the best tasting protein bars on the market. Again, that's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, rounding third, headed home. As always, appreciate you for making Locked On Rockets your first listen each and every day. For your next listen, be sure to check out the Locked On NBA podcast. It's got NBA experts Monday through Friday covering the biggest stories in the league. I'm on the Monday show. You got to check it out. Also, soft plug here for Locked On NBA Draft. Richard is there doing amazing work over there. The entire team over at Locked On NBA Draft is incredible. You've got to go check out that podcast. If you're a Rockets fan, you absolutely need to go check out that podcast, because they're going to have you covered with super in-depth information about the NBA Draft leading up to probably the most important, like, you know, month of the season. Well, it's not even part of the season, unfortunately. It's the most important part of the Rockets season, right? The regular season doesn't matter. Richard, when we look at this top four from this draft, I've kind of boiled it down to, and I think this is kind of just my philosophy when it comes to looking at, you know, the guys at the top, and you kind of already touched base on this by saying that there's not, you know, a superstar in this draft, right? You maybe get a really good player, but not necessarily like a franchise-altering talent. That said, I still think the top of the draft is the area where you are aiming to hit the biggest home run possible with whatever pick you have, be it 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever. And it's later in the draft where maybe you can take some risks. Maybe you go for the more surefire prospect, depending on where you're at organizationally, like all those things. But when you're in the top 5 or maybe even top 10, you want a home run. So in your eyes, because I have my own opinions on this, but in your eyes, who has the highest ceiling out of the top 4 guys, and who has the, like, conversely lowest ceilings, and then also like their floors as well? Because I think that's kind of an interesting discussion as to where you put those guys as far as their NBA floor and their NBA ceiling.
You want me to just do those four?
Yeah, just those four for now.
So in ceiling, and this is not necessary, I'll combine the realisticness of hitting the ceiling and also the just overall outcome. It starts with Chet Holmgren. I mean, like, he's a unicorn. Like I said, he has the chance to be that true ball handling five who can defend at an incredibly high level, rebound, finish at the rim, shoot threes. That's a unicorn. So I think safely it's him. The likelihood, though, still does vary, but I think he still gets number one. After that, it's probably Jaden Ivey. We're seeing Ja Morant absolutely explode, and their games aren't the same, but it's not far apart. So looking at that, it's hard not to say him. And then Jabari Smith and then Paolo Banchero. Conversely, on the floor, I would go highest floor probably starts at Jabari. Then it goes – man, that's tough. I would say Paolo. I wanted to say Ivy, but the whole thing for me is like the jump shot. It's not there yet, and that worries me just a little. Granted, the numbers are a little bit skewed because he loves taking deep threes. And then I would go Ivy and then Chet. Like that's – Chet is safely in last place of the four.
Okay. And that's – I'm glad you went that route because that's actually exactly the same mindset that I've had towards these top guys, which – you know what, Richard? I'm going to give you a ton of credit because I feel like my ability to evaluate prospects stems from all the work that I did with you last season on LOR. And so now I have a better understanding the second go around because obviously Rockets fans haven't cared about the draft for years up until last season. So it was a very new experience for me. And then this year I'm coming in and I'm like looking at prospects. And I'm like, okay, let me watch for this. Let me look for this, like all of this. So I'm going to credit you with my ability to evaluate talent coming out of the draft because it feels like we're, you know, on the same wavelength right now.
Hey, I appreciate it. But does this mean I'm responsible for any of your misses?
Oh, it's absolutely. Yeah. You you know what? I get to claim all of my wins and you get to claim all of my L's. Okay. We're going to go with that. Like you are responsible for all of my horrendous draft takes. It's all on your shoulders at this point. Also shout out to Nathan Fogg. It's a little bit on his shoulders as well, but, good friend of the show, Nathan Fogg, T and Rockets. Got to go check him out. But, with that said, of those top guys, it's funny because as far as the floor goes, right, I have like, you know, Jabari and Paolo kind of like 1A, 1B on the floor because I think ultimately they're gonna translate in some capacity at the NBA level. There's not necessarily a worry that they, you know, would, you know, not find a home in an NBA rotation somewhere. But as we look at these top four guys, Richard, this is where we're going to get, I'm going to allow you to be a little bit biased here with your allegiance and fandom towards the Orlando Magic spilling in here. For those that don't know, yes, he is at Mavs Draft on Twitter, but he also has allegiances and ties to the Orlando Magic. That said, of the top four prospects, who do you think, or who would you like personally want to see where in which situations from the teams that are reasonably going to be at the top of the draft lottery? So we're expecting, you know, Houston, Detroit, Orlando, the Thunder, you know, Pacers, like all these teams that are reasonably going to be at the top of the draft pecking order. Which prospect do you think is, or which teams, I guess, do you think are best tailor-made for certain prospects to, you know, shine in certain situations?
Man, I want to say Detroit for all four because I know there's a big rivalry brewing between the two, and I'm not just saying this because of that. But like you look at, and we talked about this the other day, like you look at some of the teams that are rebuilding right now, count their true young talent and like say, this player will safely be a starter in 3 years. Detroit, Oklahoma City, Orlando, and Houston, Detroit far and away has the fewest players. So like naturally everybody fits there. So like, I'm inclined to go, oh yeah, Jaden Ivey's a great fit. Chet Holmgren's a great fit. Like all these people. So like, I want to exclude them, but Chet Holmgren actually is probably the best one for Detroit because you look at Cade Cunningham and him would be amazing. But then I go in my head, I'm like Jabari Smith at the true point guard, like Cade Cunningham would do wonders for him. But so to kind of dodge Detroit and take him out after that little rant, I would absolutely love to see Chet in Houston. Him and Alperen Şengün would be incredible. It would not only would it complement each other up top, I think it just makes everybody else better. And you know, you look at the post playmaking both of those guys could have. I think it helps Kevin Porter Jr., Jalen Green. It does a lot. And I think it also helps the defense. That's also a major factor. But having a truer stretch five than Alperen Şengün would do wonders. Jaden Ivey, and just anywhere but Orlando, any of the three. I get it. Look, you might miss on Ja Morant. But that's kind of the consequences of drafting a guard the last 3 years. So I don't know. You kind of put yourself in that corner and these are the results, like whatever. And then Paolo second, I mean, again, Detroit, but outside of that, I would say it's really probably Houston. I love the idea of an average defender who can score at will next to a couple good scorers already. I really like that fit.
Okay. All right. Well, I like that you're ringing home Houston in a bunch of these. I don't know if you're just trying to, you know, play towards the crowd. Maybe you're just trying to earn some Rockets brownie points here based on a lot of different factors at play between the Mavs and Magic. You're trying to get some, you know, some redeemable qualities in on this podcast. But I am very intrigued by the idea of an Alperen Şengün Chet Holmgren front court. And that's possibly also part of the reason I haven't, like, I'm still firmly I'm hitting the desk just to send home the point. I'm still firmly on Jabari Smith Island, but I was also very, very, very firmly on the Evan Mobley Island early last year after taking a brief, like, you know, 3-hour detour through, like, you know, Suggs Island. And then I was Evan Mobley about, you know, all the way till 3 or 4 weeks up to the draft. And that's when I started to really shift towards Jalen Green. And so that could very well be the case this time around where I'm firmly Jabari and maybe I lean towards Chet as we get closer to the draft, because you're right. That kind of goes back to my question from previously, right? Where it's like, I don't think Alperen Şengün's a 4 at the NBA level. So like he'd be the 5, Chet would be your 4. But like we're moving into such a positionless age, it really doesn't matter. They just complement each other so well on both ends.
Yeah, and I think literally from the first game Gonzaga played, they played like Dixie State, you could tell the way Chet played with Drew Timmy, it's almost one-to-one of the strengths and weaknesses that they have that him and Şengün would have with him and or you know what I'm saying? Like it's a one-to-one.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love that. And while, yes, I would absolutely love your brownie points, by the way, I just genuinely think it's also very easy to project, you know, I mean, like with all due respect, the Rockets have the worst record in the league. It's easy to project top talent on bad teams. That's why all 4 of these really seem like fits. But the whole Chet thing, I mean, I could go on days about this. Like all of his weaknesses, I feel like in terms of being a big are made up for by Şengün. Put him on the, you know, if you got Steven Adams, fine, put Şengün on him. Then you play to Chet's strengths. You can easily play to each other's strengths and weaknesses better with that.
I think that's what, you know, the Rockets fans who do want to see Chet in Houston, I think that's kind of what they're utilizing. There's some propaganda happening towards that front with Steven Silas playing Alperen Şengün and Christian Wood kind of side by side with each other, talking about their strengths and weaknesses when they're playing alongside each other, both offensively, defensively. I got in a good question to Silas the other day about the double big lineup. And I think maybe fans are kind of looking at that thinking, okay, well, if we can jettison Christian Wood this offseason and, you know, get back an asset or two or just, you know, move him away from Houston, you bring in Chet Holmgren and then suddenly that's your starting front court for the next decade, whatever, here in Houston. That could be a really, really intriguing possibility. But Richard, as always, when I have you on the show, whether I have you on the show or not, it's the end of the show, which means we have to do a Tankathon lottery sim. So here we go. This is how you're really going to endear yourself to Rockets fans, because if we get a crappy spin, then it's clearly your fault, because so far the spins have been relatively okay this season. So here we go. Lottery spin time.
Hey, before you reveal it, all I'm going to say is all last year, you know, that pick was up for grabs. All last year, you got the terrible draws. So if you get a terrible draw, I got you.
You know, that's actually so true. We kept getting the terrible draws and it kept conveying to OKC, OKC, OKC every time last year. And it didn't actually convey to OKC. So maybe this is how it works. We get all the bad juju out here on LOR, and then come draft night, they walk away with the number 1 or the number 2 overall pick. But in this one, the Rockets did fall all the way down to number 5. It's one of the worst spins I've done so far. So we've got Orlando at number 1. Congrats.
Thank you.
OKC at number 2, New York jumps all the way up to number 3, and New Orleans jumps up to number 4. So, Richard, do me the honors, knock out the draft all the way down to 5.
Wait. So did Detroit get number 6? I'm asking the wrong questions, but...
Yeah, Detroit fell down to 6.
Okay, so Orlando number 1, give me Jabari.
Okay.
And then you said...
OKC, no. New York, and okay. New Orleans.
Wow. Well, you know what? I don't think OKC passes up Chet. I almost gave him Ivy, but also New York being right there needing a guard, that's cakewalk. So give him Ivy. And then New Orleans gets Paolo, another number 1 pick from Duke. That's a little bit sus. And then at number 5, man, you know, it becomes wide open from here. Naturally, I kind of want to go AJ Griffin. There's a couple other guys I would actually throw into the mix here. One is an obvious one, and that's Keegan Murray. I think he continues to rise.
Not who I thought you were going to say. No.
So maybe we don't have, maybe I'm just missing this obvious player. I think you were just expecting me to say Benedict Mathurin.
That's the guy that I'm very intrigued by. If the Rockets do find themselves down at five, I've got, like, I'm so back and forth between AJ Griffin and Benny Math. Like, yeah. I can't decide, because I think there's maybe more like upside star potential with AJ Griffin, but Benedict Mathurin is so solid. Like, he's just, you plug him in and he's just going to be so complimentary to everybody else on the floor and just raise the overall, like the overall floor of the team just skyrockets, I think, when you include Benedict Mathurin in your lineup. That's,
yeah, I mean, he's like a real 3-and-D guy day one, because he has, I think, and I'm side tangenting here, I'm so sorry, but the main thing to be a 3-and-D guy, I think a lot of people forget, it's literally not just 3-point shooting in defense. That is actually not what makes the 3-and-D guy so special. It's the threat of doing other things. Like Duncan Robinson, for example, is really good at those handoff passes. Like, everybody collapses on the shot and he can make them pay. And Benedict Mathurin can make guys pay because they close out on the 3-point shot. Boom, he's cutting in and he's an explosive finisher. So I really like him. I don't know if I'd take him at number five is my whole thing. But anyway, so AJ Griffin is probably the pick, but the two I would say are Keegan Murray and Shadon Sharp. And that one, he's a mystery. But if you, I mean, if you hear anybody who's watched him in high school extensively talk, they're blown away. I mean, Jay Billis said he's like the most dominant high school player since Zion. He's a three-level scorer with a 7-foot wingspan. He's 6'5 and super athletic, has the same finishing ability as Jalen Green. It kind of raises the question, would you really take another Jalen Green type at number five, two straight years? I don't know. But I think I lean AJ Griffin, but those are the options I would present.
All right. Well, being the resident Rockets homer and host, I will co-sign the drafting of AJ Griffin at number five if the Rockets should find themselves in the unlucky position of falling that far down in the draft. But Richard, always a pleasure to have you on the program. We're going to have you back to defend your AJ Griffin over Jaden Ivey on your big board take. We're going to have you back consistently leading up to the draft to do the deep dives on these players. All the stuff that we did last season, we're going to bring you back in the fold to get going again this year. But always a pleasure to have you on. Do me a favor, let everybody know where they can track you down at.
Yeah, the hub is at Mavs Draft. Anything I post to my site, mavsdraft.com, or anything for Locked On NBA Draft, I posted on Mavs Draft, so that's pretty much the site. And Jackson, last year I was horribly unprepared every single time for the bustability ranking. Trust me, I've been wheeling that all year since August of last year. I've been thinking, I'm like, okay, this is it. And like, I'm so scared for the actual moment. It's been so much hype.
Well, I can't wait to get you back on when we start doing the individual like breakdowns of these players, because the bustability rating was my favorite like creation last year. And I can't wait to bring it back in full force. But Richard, always a pleasure to have you on the show, man.
Hey, appreciate it.
That's going to do it for today's episode. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google, brand new Odyssey app, free and available on all platforms. Also, be sure to check out Locked On Rockets on YouTube. Go to YouTube, search Locked On Rockets, like, comment, subscribe, all of that good stuff. Did you agree with Richard's takes on the top four guys? Let us know in the comments. How do you feel about the top four? Are you still sitting on Jabari Island? Do you want to see Chet in a Rockets jersey? Let me know in the YouTube comments. I do read each and every one of those, try to interact with them when I can. But as always, thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.